Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:04 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is August 13th. Oil prices were down a little in here today, but there's been an upward bias to trading over the course of the last couple of months, and it's right in the region of the trend mean, so we might see some consolidation in this area. But I thought that it was interesting today that Israel and the United Arab Emirates have decided that they're going to normalize relations. Now, that is a positive on the in the short term. Over the medium term, it does suggest that they're opening the door to a more united front against to combat the rise of Iran. So that does suggest that there is the potential for greater geopolitical conflict further out in the future. Well, oil prices right now are not responding to that. They're much more attuned to the continued downgrading of support, or I guess supply would probably be the more accurate term, in the USA. There's been a lot less investment in drilling, and the idiosyncrasy of unconventional oil is simple, that if you stop drilling, you get less oil. It's not like in a conventional well where you drill the well and then you don't have to do a lot of additional drilling to ensure that you still get supply. So there's an elasticity to pricing for unconventional oil and gas that you just don't have with conventional oil and gas, and then that creates this ability to measure the general amount of supply that's going to hit the market at various price points. And when we look at the longer term chart over the last decade, well, we've got a very rangy environment, but there's plenty of evidence that resistance is definitely starting to come in around the $70 area. Now, we have the potential, therefore, that prices could almost double from here and still be in a longer term range. But the big consideration that oil investors and indeed the Fed have is just how strong is growth going to be. We've seen a rebound in PMI figures internationally, and that was obviously following a very deep pullback in the second quarter, so there's a rebound in the third quarter that's to be expected. But the consensus is that the rebound will not persist into the fourth quarter, and that growth will then moderate back to what might be more normal conditions. So velocity of money should then also start to improve. But one thing that I thought was or is quite interesting is the fact that government bond yields continue to march higher. They're up another 3 basis points in here today. So it's gone from 50 to 70 in the space of only the last 6 sessions. Now, obviously, that's not a very big move when we start to think about the broad spectrum of returns from the bond markets over the years. But when we're talking about such incredibly low interest rates, then every basis point counts. And this move has been catalyzed by the determination of the US Treasury to stretch the maturities of the outstanding debt. So they're going to start issuing longer dated bonds. And of course, that introduces the potential that the money that you eventually get paid back in will not be worth what you put in the future. So investors are beginning to demand an additional yield buffer to compensate them for that risk of deflation. Well, that's also part of the reason why oil prices have not rallied more, because the oil market is worried that we're not going to have renewed growth. Bond investors are still only demanding 70 basis points, so they're only at the very beginning of hedging the risk from deflation, or sorry, from devaluation and inflation rising as a result. Oil prices haven't even begun to start to consider that right now, because they're more concerned with the overall supply environment. When we eventually start to see bond yields pushing through 1% and back above the 200-day moving average, well, then that's when oil prices should start to reflect inflationary pressures, because there is still this very big divergence between the considerable strength we've seen over the last few months in gold and the inability of oil to rally. So obviously there is the supply argument is the big differentiator. There is plenty of oil around right now, although the supply is being inhibited. Whereas with gold, we have not seen the same supply response. Now, gold prices have steadied in here around the $1,900 area, and it's the first area of potential support. I do still think that $1,800 is a more logical area where we might anticipate some support coming through, but if it can hold $1,900, well, then that is even more positive. But we are still really very overextended relative to the trend mean. That was an awfully big downward dynamic we've seen in here this week, and I think new investors to gold will simply look back at the big pullback we saw in March and say, well, golly, it didn't last very long, so we're going to see the price just march straight back up to new highs. I think that's a little foolhardy. I think that following these big downward dynamics from the region of a previous peak, it's rather to be expected that we should see some consolidation. But the reality here is that gold is pricing in the potential for devaluation. And I think perhaps so too is Apple. The share was in positive territory in here today. Now, they announced a bundling program for a number of their subscription services to try and reduce the cost. But I'm rather skeptical as to just how much additional money that is going to kick in. The share has rallied spectacularly in the space of just the last 3 weeks, and the market cap is back to test the $2 trillion level at 1.97 trillion. I mean, these are just practically unbelievable valuations, but it is still rising. We would need to see a very clear downward dynamic to really signal that we're back in a supply-dominated environment. When we look at the log scale chart, well, we have plenty of evidence of lengthy and deep pullbacks in Apple. But the pace of the advance is certainly accelerating in here right now. Now, the big question then is, why have we seen such enthusiasm for the stock splits? There is, I think, perhaps a couple of different reasons. The first is that companies know that part of the reason why their stocks have been firm is because of day traders. So that's a significant factor. In Apple's case, the share now represents over 11% of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. That is really very significant single stock risk. When they eventually do follow through and go through with the 4-to-1 split, well, then it's going to take it down to approximately the 10th largest holding. That will reduce single stock exposure in the index, which would be a positive development. It is particularly interesting, however, that that in the Dow today, Apple was the best performer and Cisco was the worst, and the share was down in a dynamic manner and opened down on sales that were nowhere near where the market was expecting. So there's certainly some evidence of the coronavirus impacting infrastructure development, since Cisco is primarily producing routers for, and basically building out the 5G network. That does, I think, also begin to question just how much enthusiasm there is for the rollout of the 5G network, because Apple has already delayed the rollout of its 5G handset, but the market is still willing to give the benefit of the doubt that a lot of people have been waiting for that and that they are going to upgrade their phones. And of course, that is to the extent that that is possible, considering just how much those new phones are going to cost. I had an interesting conversation with a friend well, I guess it's a friend who related a story about someone they know who works at the Gucci store in Rodeo Drive. And what they've had is quite an influx of people with food stamp cards, EBT cards, asking to buy shoes with their stimulus checks. Well, a lot of unemployed people have been getting $600 extra in terms of their unemployment benefit. And it is interesting that Gucci loafers do tend to cost around $600. So they've had a surge in demand as a result of the unemployment benefits. Now, obviously, buying Gucci loafers is not exactly why the additional $600 in support was provided to unemployed people, but it has certainly been one of the contributing factors in continued consumer demand. Now, luxury goods companies are right back in the region of the peaks over the last couple of years. And that's certainly true of Kering, which is Gucci's parent. LVMH is also right in the region of its peak. But when we think about the potential here, I think one thing is also interesting is that Hermès, which is generally speaking well beyond the reach of anyone spending $600, is starting to find support now in the region of the trend mean. There is, I think, clear potential here that luxury goods sales are going to continue to do well, and the share is finding support in the region of its previous peak. So there is certainly plenty of evidence that the stimulative action has been supportive of continued consumer demand, both in the luxury goods sector, but also just in the plain vanilla consumer sector. Costco continues to hold its breakout. And what is also, I think, particularly interesting is that companies that really rely heavily on just a weight of people in their stores have also rebounded in a pretty dramatic fashion. So we've seen, for example, that TJX has recouped most of the decline and is now right in the region of its peak from back in June as well. Well, this is supportive of the view that the stimulative action is helping to continue to support consumer activity. Now, the S&P 500 is right in the region of its peak from back in February. Now, investors may need some additional convincing that the consumer is back in robust health, but it is, of course, largely dependent on the continued supply of liquidity. And the Federal Reserve, in particular, is very reticent to bet on additional growth. They are clearly talking about the scope for renewed upticks in cases to continue to have an impact. And that means that despite the fact that we have had the velocity of money picking back up, the Federal Reserve has not been reducing the size of the balance sheet. They haven't been adding to it either. But this is stimulative, the fact that economic activity has been picking up, and against an environment where there's still plenty of liquidity floating around the system. And the US government is also willing to continue to run massive deficits. Well, then it's reasonable to conclude, and that with the low interest rate environment, the and the very clear dash for yield among investors, that the accelerating trends that we've seen are continuing to get some support. AMD, for example, having gone from 50 to 85 in the space of about a month, has so far been able to hold the majority of its advance. Now, it's extremely overbought in the short term. It's a very clear example of acceleration. There is absolutely no question of that. But it has accelerated before. And on each of those occasions, it has continued to find support in the region of the 200-day moving average. So it's following this kind of reconfirming action where people have experienced the acceleration before, that they're willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But when we start to think about just how much of a price move has already occurred, then the share could almost halve and still be in the region of the 200-day moving average. The risk that's involved with some of these overextended trends is extremely acute. And Tesla is another company that has continued to do well. The share was up another $66 in here today and coming back towards the upper side of the range that's persisted for most of the last month. There is speculation that it will be admitted to the S&P 500. That's one of the reasons why people are buying it. Then there is the additional reason that they are going to split the shares, which investors are willing to bet, right now at least, that it will encourage additional investors into the market. I think that is in large part ignoring the fact that a lot of services now are offering slicing on shares, that it's already possible for day traders to buy Tesla shares, but they're not buying it at $1,600. They're buying a tenth of it. They're buying 15% of one share. And this slicing service that Robinhood and a lot of the other brokers are offering has already made these very expensive shares accessible. So it is questionable just how much additional funding will come into the share when they do split it. But we will find that out. I do, however, think that there is a certain amount of buy the rumor, sell the news to all of this. When we start to think about, well, where is value or where are the better opportunities? Well, I do think that commodities do look like they are going to break their downtrend. The continuous commodity index has clearly now pushed back up and recouped the vast majority of its decline, and it is now back above the psychological 400 level. So that is a meaningful event. Copper prices had been quite weak over the course of the last few days and was down again in here today. So when we start to think about the size of the dynamics, the inside the range and the internal dynamics of the range, this does still look like a process of mean reversion. But as long as it is holding the region of the trend mean, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. When we then think about what's going on in China, well, they are certainly buying more iron ore and copper, and they do appear to be supporting the market on pullbacks, but there isn't a great deal of enthusiasm to push it on to new high ground in the short term. The CSI 300 is in almost exactly the same condition, but the technology sector internationally continues to do well. So the Chinext index has really rocketed up and out of its base formation. Now it is also looking like it is consolidating. The big question, I think, for investors is it worth looking for exposure outside of China? The performance of the Chinese market has been superior relative to other emerging markets of late. The Indian market has also rebounded, and it is back in the region of its peaks in US dollar terms. When we look at it in local currency terms, well, then it's got a very significant uptrend. So that does tell us just how much the rupee has been devalued over the course of the last 12 years. But the Nifty is back above its trend mean. It is back above the psychological 10,000 level. It has plenty of room in which to consolidate and still be in a recovery scenario. But the bigger picture, of course, is that when we start to look at other emerging markets, well, China may have outperformed in the short term. But sometimes, as a longer-term investor, one has to think about the return of your money or the return on your money. And when we start to think about geopolitical tensions, then there is obviously a risk with investing in China that is likely to be amplified as time goes on. When we look at a number of different Asian markets and rebase them all to US dollars, then there is the potential that Asia ex-China is likely to become more of an investment theme. We have just seen the introduction of a futures market in Singapore offering exactly that exposure. Now, this is brand new, and there's very little open interest in those contracts right now. But the very existence of the product does suggest that there is anticipated demand, and this is likely to be a bigger theme going forward. When we think about the US dollar overall, it does look increasingly likely that the dollar index is going to continue to move lower. And it was in additional negative territory in here today. Perhaps the most important point is that even though we had the short-term oversold condition right at the end of July, we have not seen any kind of real meaningful rebound. And there is still the wide overextension relative to the trend mean. But it would have to rally in a very meaningful fashion to question the downward bias overall. Then the Asia Dollar Index, which has been underperforming for a quite long time now, it peaked in 2011. It is now back above the trend mean. Now, we still have the sequence of lower rally highs, but there is the potential here that we're going to see additional strength over the next 6 months to a year. I think the obvious conclusion is that because of the coronavirus and the short-term overbought conditions we have on a number of markets, that the potential for a recovery in emerging markets is probably not a short-term consideration, but rather that it is likely to be more of a 2021 story rather than a 2020 story overall. That there is the potential that we're likely to see a rather significant move in emerging markets in 2021, when the coronavirus starts to recede into the background. That's also likely to be highly beneficial for consumer demand everywhere. The one thing that I think most families feel is the absence of a holiday in 2020. Certainly, we bought some young coconuts at the supermarket last week, and the first thing my daughter said when we opened them was, "Oh, I really miss having going on holiday this year." And I think the vast majority of families feel like that. It suggests that in 2021 we're going to have a massive resurgence in tourism demand. As soon as the fear from the coronavirus recedes, people are going to be everywhere as tourists. Now, that does suggest that we're likely to have inflationary pressures rising significantly in 2021. And that is likely to put downward pressure on the US dollar in particular. So that's also likely to be very clearly beneficial for emerging markets, because that's where a lot of US dollar denominated debt is concentrated. The strength of the dollar over the course of the last 5 years has been a massive headwind for the ASEAN sector in particular. When we just look at the performance over the course of the last while, we've had a massive decline, but the really stellar performance for the sector was up to about 2013. It came rocketing off the lows in 2008. Now, because of the strength of the dollar over the last 5 years, it really hasn't performed. If the dollar continues to deteriorate, then that really is a green light for the ASEAN region. But we may need to get past the coronavirus before it really starts to fire. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.